Today's program has been brought to you by GreatBrewers.com, a social media marketing platform dedicated to promoting the world's great brewers and the beers they create. For more information, visit GreatBrewers.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good evening and welcome to Foment About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I'm Mary Izette.
And I'm Chris Kuzmi.
And we're your co-host of this weekly live show on all things fermentable.
We are archived on iTunes, Stitchers, and HeritageRadioNetwork.org every Monday, 7 p.m. But if you don't catch us, you know, download it. And if you don't like it, get it for your friends.
All right, so we were very excited. Yesterday, Sunday, December 8th, we had our very first fermentation festival slash competition. It was a chocolate and spice home fermentation fest. We teamed up with Jimmy's Number 43 and Divine Chocolate to put this on. We had 13 entries and a really good time. So people could either ferment with Divine Chocolate or cocoa product or any kind of spice. So we had a full range of fermentations from kombucha to fermented to bread to what else? Mead, beer, chutney, all kinds of good stuff.
A dye. What's a dye?
It's a fermented crepe. And delicious.
It was awesome. There was amazing creativity yesterday. Everyone who came, thank you to all who came, and we look forward to doing another one. We will definitely do so with different themes throughout the year. We earned some money for Heritage Radio Network. We are very psyched about that. And we had some really amazing winners. The winners were...
So we had several categories. The alcoholic category was won by John Nagley with his chocolate habanero mead. The non-alcoholic category...
went to Andrew Drumeau with his chocolate sourdough bread.
Best use of Divine Chocolate USA.
Kim Kelly with her chocolate stout floats.
And People's Choice.
The people spoke and chose John Nagley with his chocolate habanero mead. But let's dive in and talk to them about what they made. We pre-recorded some things at yesterday's event, and yep. Here we go. So we're in the back of Jimmy's Number 43 on Sunday, December 8th, and with Suzanne Abaza from Divine Cocoa.
Hi.
Tell us a little bit about Divine Cocoa as a company and where you fit in.
So Divine Chocolate is a fair trade chocolate company. What's particularly interesting about us is we are farmer owned. So we are partially owned by the Kwapa Cocoa Cooperative in Ghana. We source all of our cocoa fair trade from them. So the item that we were using today was mostly our cocoa powder. Mm-hmm. I think we all had our 70% chocolate
yep,
here and some of our seasonal
bars.
Stuff.
That's right. And we had about 13 contestants today, 13 different dishes, and a lot of really interesting things came out of it. What were some of your favorites?
I really liked the chocolate bread.
Yeah.
I was expecting it to be really sweet, but had a really nice, subtle chocolate taste. So I actually went back for seconds and put some of that chocolate sauce on top of it, which was...
Well done. That was one thing that came up, actually. We were doing a lot of collaborations between the fermented things that
I
happened
saw that
today.
Happen. Yeah.
And we thought maybe we should have done an extra one that came down to, like, you know, the best collaboration, the best mashup. How long have you been with Divine Chocolate? And how long has Divine Chocolate been around?
So we originally started in the UK in 1993. We've been in the US for a little over 5 years now. So we have a 38% milk, then we have a 70% dark, and we go all the way up to an 85% dark, and we have some stuff in between that's paired with fruit, nut, and mint. We are one of the only fair trade chocolate companies that is also farmer-owned.
Right. Uh-huh.
So how fair trade works is farmers get a fair trade premium for the fair trade cocoa that they sell, but because our company is also owned by its farmers, they also get dividends off of the profits of Divine Chocolate.
That's amazing. How many farmers did you say?
It's actually a network of 60,000 farmers now. They started as 2,000 farmers when Divine Chocolate was founded.
That's incredible. It's really awesome.
What were some of the other things that you thought were interesting out there as far as, or, you know, innovative or that you didn't expect coming into this?
The crepes are really cool.
Yeah.
The chocolate on the outside, we were talking about that.
A dye, yeah. Indian dish, a dye.
Which is actually a fermented crepe, yeah.
Oh, that was really cool. I think that there are a lot of really creative uses. I mean, I look at Divine Recipes a lot. You know, we always get like the random cookies and the classic cakes, but it was cool to see some different things. I really liked the beer float. I think that was the first time I'd ever had a beer float before. And I was a little nervous when she handed it to me.
She did that really, really well. Absolutely. Very excited.
And it was fun because Divine Cocoa was in the beer as well as the chocolate sauce. Uh-huh. So that was a good, you know, two for one in there as far as using cocoa. Yeah.
Absolutely.
My name is Kim Kelly, and I entered in a chocolate stout with cinnamon and caramel ice cream topped with more chocolate syrup, all made from Divine Chocolate.
And you took first place in the best use of Divine Chocolate. Next we have...
John Nagley. I made a chocolate habanero mead.
And you took first place in the alcoholic category as well as People's Choice. And last but not least, we have...
Andy Germeau. I made a chocolate sourdough.
And you took best use of non-alcoholic category. So...
So tell us about what you did with this stout float. I mean, you used this chocolate in a couple different ways. One thing that was really fascinating to the judges was, first of all, how well flavor-wise it came together, but how you used that chocolate. Please let us know.
Okay. Well, I had a stout that was just wrapping up in secondary fermentation. So when I discovered this Chocktoberfest festival, I decided to use some of the Divine Cocoa, put 2 tablespoons of that, mixed with just, you know, made into kind of a syrup with water, poured that into secondary fermentation, and then also added in on top like a chocolate syrup made with milk chocolate, dark chocolate combined, bottled that, and then decided to make a beer float, mixing that with a cinnamon caramel ice cream, and then topped it off with some more of the syrup that I used in the bottling process, but just the natural syrup without mixed with the beer. And then I used a little dash of sea salt to finish it off.
Now, so basically instead of priming sugar, you used a chocolate priming syrup.
Yeah.
And how did you use like your traditional priming sugar quantities, I guess, to bottle and then just added the cocoa in?
I really just used the sugar from the chocolate. So it was pretty flat. There wasn't a lot of carbonation. I also knew that I didn't have many days to carbonate, so I figured, you know, let's just go for it with the chocolate, what they have left over.
I think that's a good idea. So if anybody is in a rush and needs to, you know, use their bottled beer before it's fully carbonated, consider a float.
I felt like the float might be, you know, you wouldn't have to worry about the carbonation too much.
So. No, I like it. Very creative.
I see Christmas floats.
And delicious. Yeah. So, Mr. Nagley.
Yes.
So what inspired you? Well, you're a long-term mead maker as well as beer and wine and port and all kinds of good alcoholic and vinegary
and cider.
Yeah. Cider. So what inspired you to do a chocolate habanero?
I won a liter of chocolate for martini mix. And what in the world am I going to do with this? I had an inspiration. And I said, you know something? Not just chocolate. Chocolate habanero because of Bobby Honeybee.
Right. And his famous ghost pepper mead, who all of us in New York City have tasted and loved.
Yes.
So how did you use the chocolate syrup? Did you heat it? Did you secondary?
3 gallons of mead, 1 liter of the syrup, and that was it. Just let it sit. Cool. And one habanero for the entire 3 gallons.
And you used, when you did the, was this the mead in secondary by the time you added the chocolate syrup?
Yes, primary fermentation of the mead, and then when I racked to secondary, I added the chocolate and the habanero.
And the habanero was fresh or dried?
Fresh.
Fresh. Perfect. It was delicious. And Andy, what inspired you to make a chocolate sourdough? So I know we're going to have a program with you in the future that's all about sourdough bread making at home. So you've been doing a lot of sourdough bread making.
Yeah, so I've been baking for about a year, and my wife just found a chocolate bread recipe online. She's like, you have to make this. So that's basically the story there. I took the recipe online. I adapted it. I changed up a bunch of the recipes. I added a little more spice, and I went from there. So the bread, you can see where my mind is. The liquid beer has... it's 90% wheat, 10% rye, and it's a natural starter, so it's a sourdough-type bread. And it's got homemade vanilla extract, chili peppers, cayenne pepper, and cinnamon in it. And then I replaced half of the water with chocolate stout as well.
Okay, cool.
And for the cocoa, it's cocoa powder and it's chocolate chips, or chocolate chunks, I guess you could call them.
cool. One of the comments regarding your bread was how a lot of people really expected it to be a really sweet bread, and it wasn't. It had that sourdough character. It was bright, and that cinnamon kind of really dried it out. And while the cocoa and the chocolate character was all there, it wasn't this giant sweet thing, and that made the bread really awesome, especially if you paired it with the chutney to your left.
Right? Yeah.
It went well. I reduced the honey in the recipe quite a bit as well. I like to do breads that are kind of like sweet, desserty type breads, but I like to reduce the sugar so they still kind of have their more natural bread flavor in them and they don't just taste like cake. So I think that went well. It tasted great with the chutney. It also tasted really good with the chocolate syrup from the ice cream.
I was thinking
I should have brought maybe some like cherry compote or something like that to add to it. I could have done like a sweet side and then a savory side. Maybe find the right cheese with some kind of butter. They could have gone
lots
on
of
it.
Inspiration here.
Yes, really lots of ideas.
I'm here with Sam Burlingame, who won for inventive use
most
of
courageous.
Most courageous. Yeah, most courageous fermentation today and bringing category. It to this thing. And his question to the judge was, so you're from the chocolate life. Hi, Clay Gordon. You're one of our great friends. We've been doing pairings here at Jimmy's for a long time. But
we were thinking about this. 2007, 2008, 2009?
6, 7, 7. Yeah,
quite some time. Yeah. You know, and I had a show on Heritage Radio Network for a little while, from the source.
That's right.
And so it's good to be back on the air, even if even proxy this way.
Yeah,
well, you know, it was a fabulous event this evening. It was really, really difficult going through all of the entries, and you know, all of them deserve to win something in some kind of way. Just fun. But you know, kombucha is very much an acquired taste. Not everybody really likes kombucha. And they may have an idea of like sort of like an overly fermented style, right? Which some of them are very, very fizzy. Mm-hmm. But then pickled watermelon.
So Sam won for pickled watermelon kombucha.
Pickled water. It's like me. I was involved in something, and I just happened to have quail's eggs around. It's like, how often do you have quail's eggs in your refrigerator? And I'm just going to use them as an ingredient. How often do you have just watermelon pickle juice left in your refrigerator?
Exactly.
And I'm going to do it. So you know, just an example of you know taking the theme and just seeing how far we can run with it and where we can go with it. It was a lot of fun. It was a really tasty thing. It's one of those things you look at and you go, I don't know. I really don't know. I don't know. But you go there. It's like many things. I don't know. Put it in your mouth.
Just put it in your mouth. So did you know? Have you made this?
I've never made this before, and I was telling a lot of people that were trying it that this never would have existed if not for this competition,
nice.
this fermentation festival. So I'm very grateful for the chance to share it and create it in the first place.
Right. And get that watermelon pickle juice out of your refrigerator and put it for something else.
Yeah, how did let's go back to how you did it real quick.
So it's not when you say pickled juice, some people might say, oh, pickled juice, pop it in there and mix it with a kombucha, but it's actually the syrup that was left over from pickling watermelon. So there's two ways that you would imagine a pickled watermelon. One would be like you would pickle a cucumber, very briny, little peppercorn, and salty. But pickling watermelon rind, I found out, was a syrupy type concoction.
Sweet
so
syrup.
It was the rinds are brined to soften them and salt them up, but then you boil them in a sugary solution. So a ton of white sugar and then some spices, some citrus slices, and I put cinnamon, clove, and peppercorns in there as well. And that's boiling up, softening them up, and then it created this just delicious, very sweet, vinegary watermelon rind. So I had a couple jars of the syrup left over. And
do you have any more of it left?
I have a little jar of it left.
I might have it here. I might have a use for it.
I don't have it with me. It's in my fridge.
Okay.
Yeah, there were a few jars in the back of the fridge, and but it, when I heard that the entries were still open on the on Fermentable.
Hey, all right.
Hey, so I said, hey, I'm gonna throw some pickle juice. I'm gonna throw some pickle juice in my booch. Yeah. So no, I mean I was telling everybody also. I mean I'm mainly a beer brewer, so I brew beer every 2-3 weeks. And I always keep a batch of kombucha on the side. My wife loves beer, which I'm very grateful for as well. So as the stuff piles up, no problem. But she loves kombucha as well, and I love it too. It's very tart and refreshing, especially in the hot summer months. So it's just like hanging out in the fall and the winter. And I'm like, I'm not like reaching in there too much. But I know Mary loves kombucha, so and alternative fermentation.
Yeah, right.
So I was very happy for the chance to bring. I had a pumpkin ale on hand with the spices, and I had my kombucha that I'm just sipping nowadays.
and just the chance to work those spices into the kombucha and create something like totally brand new that I've never done before.
Sam, you're totally fun. You're not just a beer brewer, you're a beer educator, and you do workshops here in New York. And how does somebody find out about that?
Yep. You can go to brewheister.com, not brewmeister, brewheister. Like you're stealing it back from the big boys and giving it to them.
You have a Facebook page too, right?
Yeah, we got on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter as Brewheister, and brewheister.com. So I do workshops, which I call brewtorials, every once in a while. So about every 3 weeks, so along the brewing schedule. So you come for a 3-hour session. We actually go through a full brew day, the mash, the boil, chilling, and pitching the yeast. And then so your beer is done. You've had a hand in making it. And then you can come back in a couple of weeks and pick up a few bottles to take home.
That's fantastic. Cool. I love that.
We'll put the link on our website so you guys can find that easily. If you're in the New York City area and you want to learn how to homebrew, this is a great way to do it.
Or email Sam at brewheister.com.
That's true. Right?
But have you heard of the chocolate life? So going back to the thing that started me turning on this thing, right. What is the chocolate life, Clay?
The chocolate life. Chocolate life is two things. The first is that it's the world's largest online community dedicated to cocoa and chocolate. Started almost 6 years ago. There are now 8,200, 8,300 members in over 150 countries. And so all we do is talk about cocoa and chocolate. And I have members from cacao growers on one hand to celebrity chefs on the other and everything in between. So it's really become a place to crowdsource the answers to questions about making chocolate, growing cocoa, making confections, anything anybody might be interested in knowing about when it comes to cocoa and chocolate.
Well, it's awesome. Thank you for coming and judging today.
You know, it was quite an inspiration all the way around. Seeing people, as I say, take hold of the theme and the number of different ways that they put it together is always inspirational. So it's always a lot of fun to come down here to Jimmy, see what it is going on, working with the events you guys all put together, and seeing just how delicious everything is.
We hope to do lots of more. Fermentiva.
Hey, well, Fermentiva. Fermentiva.
So, you like good beer. Whether you're a craft beer pro or just had your first sip of an IPA, GreatBrewers.com is your number one beer resource on the internet. GreatBrewers.com bridges the gap between the world's great brewers and the consumers who enjoy their products. With so much information and misinformation out there, GreatBrewers.com focuses on education and leaves no stone unturned. Take the Great Beer Test on their website and browse through an extensive product catalog. Download their mobile Beer Cloud app, which includes a GPS beer finder, a beer sommelier, and descriptions for over 5,000 different brews. What are you waiting for? Back up that passion for craft beer with some solid information and education. Visit GreatBrewers.com today.
Tanner Reich at the Chocolate and Spice Home Fermentation Festival at Jimmy's number 43. So, Hannah, tell us a little bit about the four items that you brought.
Okay, but first, let me say it's really exciting for me to be at this event. I'm really having a wonderful time, and the response to everyone's ferments is really terrific. So the event itself is really great. Thanks so much for holding it.
We're glad you're enjoying it. Yeah.
So I brought four things. I was going to bring one thing, but then I added a couple of others. The first item that I planned on bringing and that I brought is a cream cheese chocolate fudge. I made the cream cheese. It's a cultured dairy product. And I used unsweetened chocolate. And to sweeten it, I used maple sugar crystals. But I wasn't trying for a sweet flavor. I was trying for an intensely chocolatey flavor. So I only put in enough sweetener so that it wouldn't taste like it was simply unsweetened.
So tell us a little bit about how you make cream cheese at home.
Okay, I take grass-fed cream and grass-fed milk, and I heat them together to 86 degrees. You can do it on the stove, but it's preferable to do it in a water bath. And then I add cream cheese cultures, let it sit overnight. Then, and it might even take as long as 24 hours. It depends on the room temperature. Then the next day, I strain it through cheesecloth, let it sit for another 10 or 12 hours, then gather up the corners and hang it for another 12 hours. At that point, I have a really thick cream cheese.
And where do you get your cream cheese cultures from?
I get them from New England cheese making.
Okay.
Yes, with Ricky. Yes, and I get other things there. I've been really happy with what I've gotten from them.
Then tell us about the other. So you brought a cheese cracker.
Yes, I brought a savory cheddar cheese crisp. That's also a fermented food, not simply because it has the cream cheese, but I ground local organic wheat berries into flour. Not so fine that it was really flour, but so that it was almost like a nutty consistency. And then I mixed into that some buttermilk that I made, also cultured, and butter, cheddar, Cabot cheddar cheese, and cayenne pepper. I left that overnight in dough form to become softer and to be just, it's good to let your dough rest. The next day, I also added in fire cider to give it a little more punch. The next day, I rolled it into a nice cracker form, added... what did I add? A mixture of more fire cider and egg yolk to give it a nice sheen on top. And then I topped that with a wonderful Guyanese spice mixture. So I got a really nice savory cheese cracker that it's like a shortbread in a consistency. It's really wonderful.
I would agree. I think it's delicious. I didn't know what to expect. I mean, I love cheese crackers, but it's absolutely delicious.
Yeah, I don't mean to toot my horn, but I have to say those crackers are just plain delicious.
Yeah, they are. And then the last two items that you brought are both gingerbread.
That's right. They're both gingerbread. One is a gingerbread in a more traditional form of a bar, and the other is gingerbread that I simply rolled up into balls. The one that's in the ball form has a lot more buttermilk that I cultured. The one that's in the square form is less buttermilk and more whey. And they're really very dark gingerbread. Often when we think of gingerbread, we think of a brown product, but this is black in color. It has flour that I ground from grain, unsulfured blackstrap molasses, evaporated cane juice. I bought a brick of evaporated cane juice and I grated it to get my own, let's say, brown sugar.
Yeah, yeah.
And the gingerbread, in addition to being very gingery, the secret ingredients, such that they are black pepper and dry mustard.
So when we first met you, you had a wonderful cheesecake.
Oh, yes.
Ridiculously awesome.
And oh, yes.
How long did it take you to make this cheesecake, and what was this cheesecake? Tell us about this cheesecake.
Yeah, because you seem to, you do a lot of your own, like, dairy fermentations, like cream cheese and buttermilk. So the cheesecake is one of them. So we'd love to hear more about, you know, your endeavors in using all these wonderful milk fermentations.
Yeah, the cheesecake, you know, once upon a time I knew how to make a cheesecake in 2 hours, but this cheesecake took me the better part of a week to make, because first I ground my grain into flour to make the crust, soaked the crust, made cookies, crushed up the cookies, made butter, mixed the butter into the cookie crumbs, pressed it into the base. In the meantime, I made my own cream cheese and my own sour cream so that I could use the cream cheese for the cream cheese in the cheesecake and then top it with the sour cream. I added up not only the number of hours, but what it cost for this cream, for this cheesecake, and it was an outrageously expensive. I mean, of course it was delicious. It had top-of-the-line ingredients, which makes perfect sense to me because I'm going to be eating it. So, of course, it should be top-of-the-line ingredients. I mean, it's a joke that I tell people I can afford to eat the stuff I cook, but I wouldn't be able to eat it if I went to a restaurant.
It was awesome. It was awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So what are some of the other things that you've made with your home-fermented cream cheese and buttermilk? What are some of your other favorite things?
Oh, well, I like doing a lot of different kinds of ferments, not just dairy. Right now, one of the things I'm doing, and it'll be ready in another 4 weeks, is I'm halfway into eggnog.
Oh.
You tasted that.
Yes, yes. Well, when you tasted it, it was pretty sharp. Now it's really mild, and in another 4 weeks, it's going to be so mild that when you drink it, you won't know it has alcohol on it, but it'll stop you in your tracks.
So tell us about how you're doing your homemade eggnog.
The eggnog. Okay, so I took cream, and I whipped a little of it, and I separated eggs and whipped the egg whites and mixed the egg yolks and maple sugar crystals. And then I added the egg whites to the egg yolks, and then I added the cream to that, and then I added Southern Comfort, a lot of Southern Comfort. But the thing is, you can't just pour it in or you'll coagulate the egg eggs, so you need to add it really, really slowly. After it's all mixed together, you put it in the refrigerator, and every day for the first 2 weeks, I mix in the solids with the liquids, right? Because the cream is going to rise, so the liquid separates. So every day for the first 2 weeks, I mix that together. And then after the first 2 weeks, I've been mixing it every other day. So I have a gallon and a half of eggnog. Well, I did, but after a month, I have a little less because after I mix it, I always lick the spatula, obviously. So, you know, I can really taste the difference after a month. It was really, when I gave it to you to try, it was really good, but it was really sharp.
Right.
It's already much mellower.
So you're finding it gets smoother.
Oh, much smoother.
Now, did you also add spices, or are you going to add those at the
end? I'm going to add the eggnog at the I'm going to add the nutmeg at the end. But eggnog doesn't really have other spices in it.
But you wait for the
end. Yeah, then I'm waiting for the end.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So what else do you like to ferment?
I like making
or make with your
kimchi. I love making kimchi. I love eating kimchi. Sauerkraut, cucumber pickles. Sourdough bread is, that's the thing, you know. There are people who make sourdough bread that's so delicious. And theirs is so much better than mine. I make really great crackers, but other people's bread is so much better than mine that I buy other people's bread.
Yeah. Well, I think crackers is great. I mean, not that many people make crackers.
The crackers, as I said, are really, really good, and they have a really nice shortbread quality. Mm-hmm. And I use this incredible butter that has 85% butter fat. Most butter has 80% butter fat in it. So this butter is just so short that it does amazing things to bake.
All right. Here we are again in the back of Jimmy's number 43 at the end of our chocolate and spice home fermentation competition hang. We are here with Lynn Ripley, who brought an adai. What is adai?
Adai is a South Indian breakfast pancake or crepe. It's a lot like a dosa, the difference between dosas, which are more often served in the United States, is that it has coconut in it and more lentils and less rice. So it's very proteinaceous. That's what makes it healthy. And it has spices in it. So that made it appropriate for this competition and also means that you don't have to have chutney or other things with it. You can just eat it plain.
But you brought a chutney of coconut, pomegranate?
Yes, I brought it. I called it my holiday chutney because it was coconut and then red with pomegranate and green with cilantro. And then I put a little citrus in terms of kumquat.
It was delicious. And you said when you make the batter for this, you let that rice sit and ferment overnight or the grains?
More like 24 hours. You can use it in actually 3 or 4 hours, but I think it cooks better if you let it go for at least a day. And you can even let it go longer than that. It sits well in your refrigerator for the whole week. So you make a batch and you can have great breakfasts or whatever all week.
And it develops, do you find it develops more depth of flavor through the fermentation process as it kind of goes on through the week? It changes a little bit,
It
right?
changes. It gets more acidic.
Right.
It's a little bit like sourdough bread with the longer you let it ferment.
Or
it
kombucha
gets more,
or kefir. Yeah.
But I wouldn't say that the flavor gets deeper.
Okay.
The flavoring in the adai that I made can be different, but I made with two different kinds of pepper. One of them is very mild red pepper, so you can use a lot of it, and it makes the dosas look very nice and brown when they get crispy. And it also had curry leaves, which a lot of people are not so familiar with, but it's used regularly with lentil dishes in India. And if you ever see any, give them a try and throw them in your cooked lentils. They're great.
So how would you recommend somebody start if they want to make one of these crepe dishes?
So either dosas or adais. There are zillions of recipes online. And if you want to know how to make it, go to YouTube because everybody's there demonstrating how you make it. And there are real hints there. There are little tricks. And look at 2 or 3 videos and you'll know how to do it.
You're so we're going to do that, and we'll put the links on our website. So.
You were by far the hardest working person today. Yeah. You know, each one of these came out in individual order almost and shared, and this on this cold winter day, it was beautiful and warm, and it was fantastic.
Yeah,
I loved your dish today.
Yep.
And congratulations, and thank you for coming.
Yeah.
Thank you for inviting me.
For Manabat. For men about it. Clearly, I'm fascinated by a die. What's a die, Mary? Thank you very much, Jimmy's Number 43. Thank you to all the contestants. Thank you to Divine Chocolate USA. Thank you to Clay Gordon of The Chocolate Life for judging. And who am I forgetting?
Thanks for everybody for attending.
Yes. Thank you. It was a lot of fun. Look forward to more of these. And hopefully that's some inspiring stuff for you.
And we hope you guys are inspired for maybe some of your holiday cooking, like some of your own cream cheese or buttermilk. And happy holidays. We'll be back next Monday at 7 p.m. on heritageradionetwork.org.
For men about it.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.